Coming up next on Tech News Today, Facebook is launching its own answer to Snapchat stories in Poland. Amazon wants bots to hold meaningful conversations with humans someday. Arduino will turn makers into IoT makers. Twitch briefly showed off an element of gambling as part of its new currency system. And not one, but two flashbacks to 80s technology back from when I was a kid. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1610, recorded Friday, September 30th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by LinkedIn Learning. Develop talent and keep skills current with expert-led, on-demand e-learning. To request a demo for your organization or get a free individual trial, visit learning.linkedin.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give a new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about some of the biggest top, you know, tech news stories that are bubbling up. It is a Friday, so sometimes that's not as much bubbling up as you would normally get during the week, but we're going to figure it out. My name is Jason Howell. Megan Maroney, of course, is out today. She'll be back on Monday, but I have a really good friend joining me on the show here. Stoked to welcome back Jonathan Strickland from How Stuff Works. How's it going, Jonathan?
Great, Jason. Don't worry. I'm going to be extra bubbly to make up for the news.
Yes, thank you. Although you won't match the bubbly of Megan. Megan's super duper bubbly.
I can only aspire to be as bubbly. I know I won't achieve it, but I must continue to strive for it.
I have a really good feeling about this episode, Jonathan. You are always bubbly. I should let you know, I have a Galaxy Note 7 here. Should I be afraid?
Yes, absolutely should be afraid.
No, this is one of the new ones.
All right. Oh, one of the ones that were fixed.
Yeah. Gotcha. I got it. I unboxed it yesterday and I turned it on. And you know how Samsung said they were going to make the battery icon green to signify that it's the new fixed version. The battery icon was not green. So I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? But then almost immediately I got a software update and now it's green. So I'm not fearing for my life.
I do notice that you don't have it plugged in, so.
That's true, but hey, you just never know these days. Everything is exploding, if you haven't heard, all sorts of devices, so you just never know.
Yeah, you know what? Spice of life.
Yes, exactly. Keeps you on your toes. All right, we've got some news topics to discuss here, starting with Facebook wants to get in on the stories trend that was pioneered by Snapchat and then tagged onto by Instagram. But Facebook is looking to beat them to the punch in parts of the world where it's not already dominant quite yet. TechCrunch has sources in Poland who shared screenshots of Facebook's new Messenger Day feature. This enables the sharing of photos and videos, complete with, you know, filters, freehand drawing that you can do on top of the images, all that stuff in packages that expire after 24 hours. So, you know, as is the case these days with social and all the things happening in social, one social outlet has an idea, they do it, they get success off of it, and then they all end up doing it. Does this look appealing to you? What do you think?
This is the funny thing about this is that it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the news story about how Snapchat was expanding its features to be more like some of the other more permanent depositories of photos and stories and things of that nature, right?
Yep.
Like we just finished talking about that, how Snapchat was kind of moving away from the core principle that it had founded the business around, which was this ephemeral 24-hour existence of content that then would disappear. And if you missed it, you were out of luck. And some people got a little upset when it sounded like Snapchat was going to start to move away from that. Meanwhile, now we're seeing other companies that have the business model that Snapchat seemed to want to emulate by changing, moving toward the Snapchat model. This is just, it's that same trend where we saw all the niche television channels start to broaden their programming so that they were no longer catering to the audience that they had formed around at the beginning. I see that as the same thing. You want to continue growth, or at the very least, you want to stop your competitors from getting bigger. So you make these moves. And I get it from a business sense, but from a philosophy sense, it's frustrating to me as a consumer.
Yeah, you want to be able to know, or at least we've gotten used to the idea that this network is good for this thing. This network is good for this thing. Although, like, I don't really use Snapchat, and I'm not sure if it's because I'm just, my brain doesn't work with this whole ephemeral thing, or maybe the people that I communicate with aren't on Snapchat, or what is it? Would I use it if Facebook was doing it? I'm not even sure that I would, but maybe I'm just not the target audience for this. I don't know.
Yeah, and I started moving away from using the app approach to using Facebook. I tend to use I go to the mobile site for lots of different reasons. I know a lot of people don't like to have the Messenger app, which is how it's being packaged in this approach, right? So instead of it being incorporated directly into Facebook Prime, which would make no sense, you know, if you wanted to do this short-lived content, you don't want it to go on your actual Facebook profile.
Right.
Anyone you know who posts frequently to Facebook, you start to get a little, you can get a little irritated. I know, because I'm one of those people, and I irritate my friends by posting too frequently. If I had this like short-lived thing and it was going straight to my news feed, I would have no friend. Well, I would know that I have no friends.
Right. And
right now, I suspect it.
It's probably best not to know that for sure. No one wants to find that out.
No, it says a depressing day.
I'm sorry. Friday's supposed to be positive. let's talk about Amazon's news here. Amazon envisions a future where it's normal to converse with bots like its own Alexa. Amazon's willing to put its money where its mouth is to get there. The newly announced Alexa Prize is a new annual competition targeted at university students. It's designed to get them to build convincingly intelligent bots that can converse with humans on topics of their choosing. So someday in the near future, Jonathan, you could say, Alexa, I'm not going to say it out loud because it'll fire off a bunch of echoes, let's chat about baseball. And suddenly you'd get into a conversation with Alexa about baseball, and not just, not just facts, I'm assuming, but the kind of idea here is to make it a conversation, make it something that you could actually talk to your bots. Would you talk to your bots?
I mean, I've talked to bots several times because there's so many customer service programs that are essentially bots.
Right.
And so here's the thing. Whether you want to chat with your Echo device through the name that we shall not say, then or if you don't, that to me is beside the point. Mm. What I find exciting is that anytime you see this type of approach from any company where they're putting money on the line and they're defining the parameters, you see advances in AI, right? You see advances in artificial intelligence, and we stand to benefit from that, even if it goes somewhere besides where you originally intended it to go.
That's true.
And so for me, I love the idea of pushing forward that ability for a machine to carry on the semblance of a conversation. One of my favorite quotes from the GeekWire piece that we have here is about the human capacity to have a conversation. Conversing for 20 minutes is difficult for most humans.
That's true.
Which, it makes me feel good about myself. I just recorded 3 hours of content here at How Stuff Works. So I'm like, well, I got that notch. But I think that's really fascinating to think about, what does it take to create an artificial intelligent program that can respond in a natural way and continue a narrative, continue a conversation, maintain a sense of context. We've started to see that in other products already. This idea that if you ask a question and then you have a follow-up question, it starts to understand that the follow-up question relates to your first query or the answer to your first query. Mm-hmm. This is really exciting to me because it has implications far beyond a personal digital assistant.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about this just yesterday, the partnership on AI. That's the nonprofit with Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, Google, IBM, all kind of putting their brains together to figure out, get ahead of AI's kind of trajectory, because they're all pushing it so hard right now. Like we were talking about yesterday, Megan and I were talking about, it seemed like at the beginning of the year, it was like, yeah, AI is really neat, and we're doing some really cool things. We're winning this game and blah, blah, blah. And now it's like everything that we do is based around AI, and it's all getting kind of swallowed up into it. So yeah, you're right. Little kind of competitions like this that seem, maybe they seem kind of, you know, the surface level, somewhat insignificant in the grand scheme of things, could lead to really crazy things down the line that we don't even see at this point. Alexa customers will be determining which teams make it into the finals. And these teams are going to be, you know, they have to have an Echo or an Echo Dot. And then they can have the ability to load these bots with knowledge bases from all sorts of content sources, including, you know, like a Washington Post or whatever, so that they can train it on specific subjects and then, you know, let the conversation ensue, I suppose.
I have a plea for you college students out there considering this. My plea is that one team, just one, more if you want, but at least one, uses the Onion as the basis for that knowledge rather than, say, the Washington Post or something like that. The Onion. I want that. It reminds me of when IBM fed Watson the Urban Dictionary and then immediately was like, oh, we need to delete that. Watson got a potty mouth.
Yes. And I think we got a glimpse into what that may be like. I'm sure that was Tay, right? Even though that was Microsoft. But that's what one could imagine would be the outcome of something like that. I think that's brilliant, though, Jonathan. Load it up with the Onion and see what happens. I don't know. That could really go either way, but I love it. Meanwhile, Google has a plan to take the Amazon Echo out of the lead that it secured in the internet appliance race when it unveils Google Home at next Tuesday's hardware announcement. Sources to Variety say that shortly after Google Home was demonstrated on stage at Google I.O. this summer, Google began having high-level meetings with some of the biggest names in home audio, many of whom have already built compatibility for Google's Cast standard into their hardware to support Chromecast-capable streaming. Google hopes these partners are going to build their own versions of Google Home, making the idea even more ubiquitous than what we have kind of with the limited Echo family, because that's just created by Amazon at this point. Although I think they're kind of opening that up a little bit. Not only that, sources say Google took an overly aggressive approach, insisting that vendors couldn't add other digital assistants to their own if they wanted to continue using Google Cast. So it's almost as if Google Cast itself was the Trojan horse. You know, they got them in early, decided, hey, this is really great, you know, technology for your audio, your speaker or whatever, you know, the hardware is that they're building it into. That gets cast through the door. And now it's, well, but, you know, if you want to continue using that awesome technology, you're going to have to not work with the other guys on Home Assistants. What do you think about that?
I mean, yeah, that's not great, right? Like any time where you hear a story where you could imagine gangsters knocking on a shopkeeper's door and say, hey, it's you got a nice personal digital assistant here. It'd be a shame if, I don't know, someone set fire to it. Anytime you could imagine that sort of scenario, that's what we like to call a bad thing.
Yeah.
It using kind of any form of leverage or intimidation in order to discourage any hardware manufacturer from working with a competitor, that's anti-competitive. That's problematic at best. I mean, it may not be illegal depending upon their implementation, but it's certainly edging toward unethical. I definitely have some issues with that if, in fact, it is meant the way it seems to be.
Right. And if, in fact, these sources are actually, you know, reliable, this is a Variety. So Yanko Ruckers, who wrote this article, has good sources. Yeah, feels not very googly. Feels, I don't know. I don't know if the don't be evil thing still is a thing or if they've left that behind
a long ago. Maybe this isn't a Google thing. Maybe this is an Alphabet thing.
Could be. Yeah, we'll see. That's why they did Alphabet, because they can undo the rules, change them up a little bit.
Right.
And Google, of course, didn't comment on this specifically, but they did point out that they've allowed manufacturers to use technologies like AirPlay and Bluetooth in, you know, manufacturers' devices that also have CAS. So I think that's their way of saying, no, we don't always do that. We didn't these times, at least. So I suppose we'll see. We don't have much longer to wait. Next Tuesday is right around the corner, and we're going to hear all about this stuff and a whole lot more. Arduino has helped to level the playing field when it comes to creating awesome interconnected technologies on a hobbyist level and beyond. Now it's launching the Eslov IoT Invention Kit that brings the Internet of Things to the stuff that makers are making. It's a plug-and-play toolkit that offers interconnectable sensors and outputs that can be controlled via Arduino's online IDE. That's the Integrated Development Environment software. Definitely, like they've got all sorts of sensors, right? For example, you could take a GPS, an OLED display sensor, and touch dispenser. And a touch sensor, and you make a fitness monitor. Or you could take the mic, buzzer, and a button, and you make a walkie-talkie. And it's the way it's kind of set out, you know, you don't really need technical experience. To be honest, it actually looks a lot. I mean, they don't look identical, but it kind of functions, I think, very similar to Samsung's SmartThings, which, full disclosure, they have been a sponsor in the network in the past. But, you know, kind of like this, almost like a Lego Mindstorm connectivity of components to create cool electronic gadgets and doodads.
I love this approach, this sort of modular plug-and-play approach that makes things dead simple so that you can get a start. And you might have, like, a general idea, but not – you might lack the ability to completely build it out. Mm-hmm. You may not have at your disposal a bunch of hardware experts that could build the – or even – you might not even know what to order to make – the kind of device you want. With this sort of approach, once you see what's possible, you can start brainstorming, blue skying even, to the point where you might even want to experiment. Just say, like, huh, I wonder what happens if I put these components together. Would anything useful come out of it?
Right.
You might not even have an idea beforehand. And this is where we see a lot of innovation, right? We see a lot of different approaches where it goes well beyond what people anticipated when they first started creating this. That's been Arduino's story from day one.
Yeah.
We've seen so many great implementations of Arduino, particularly in the maker space. We've seen some amazing things in robotics because of Arduino, stuff that would have been well beyond the grasp of your average enthusiast. And now we're going to see the same thing with the Internet of Things. I think that's incredibly exciting. I also love the idea of people becoming more educated on the Internet of Things. We absolutely need more education in that area, specifically not just so we understand what it is and how it works, but that we also understand its limitations, the challenges we face. How do we implement it in a way where we don't create security problems? Mm-hmm. We don't increase vulnerabilities. There was a story recently about a security researcher who was hit with a DDoS attack that we suspect contained a lot of Internet of Things components directing traffic at him. We want to make sure we stop that that kind of trend. But in order to do that, we have to educate more people. And it's products like this that I feel gives you that first step where it clicks. People who didn't understand what the Internet of Things they see this, and they see the way it works, and they say, oh, I get it now. It's all these different things that leverages the power of the Internet in order to make either some sort of change in the environment or give you feedback as to what's going on. And then we can actually see some real progress, not just in the kind of inventions we have, but the way we implement the strategy.
Yeah, democratizing kind of the access to these things, which, I mean, you know, we're so, as consumers, we're so used to all of these things being prepackaged and not understanding what goes on underneath. But tools like this, you know, allow you to, at least at a basic level. And it seems like, you know, based on — this is a Kickstarter, by the way, so if you want to get in, you know, it's a Kickstarter backed project. But based on what they're kind of showing off, it can go from simple to very complex, because I mean that's kind of the beauty of Arduino after all. It's kind of your mind is, you know, is driving it. Depending on how complex you want to get with it, you can probably get there. You've got the components to do it. So go for it. Entry-level kit is $99. That includes Wi-Fi and motion hub, a button, a buzzer, and an LED. So it's definitely an entry-level kit to kind of get you started. But if you want to go all in, they've got all the way up to a pro kit, which is $499, 22 modules in total there.
That's incredible. And one more thing I just want to add is that what I really love about these kind of approaches is when you're looking at a big company, any product that they make, it's going to be based off of lots and lots of decisions at lots of levels that ultimately tend to boil down to, can we make money from this? Mm-hmm. Not is this going to do something really cool, but rather, is this going to be profitable? The really awesome thing about these kind of kits is that it allows makers to try stuff that a company probably wouldn't even attempt because they think of it as being too niche or experimental. And that's where you get the mind-blowing applications that end up, you know, making everyone say, well, now I got to get in on this because this is incredible.
Now I get it. Yeah, exactly. Finally, earlier this summer, Nintendo showed off its NES mini console, a shrunk down version of the 8-bit Nintendo Entertainment System that packs 30 classic games into that tiny little console. Very cool. It's going to be a hot item, I think, this Christmas. As we get closer to Christmas time, Nintendo is unveiling more features to get us nerds excited about it. First, the system will support save states. So that brings the ability to save your progress to one of four slots per game, regardless of if the original game supported the saving of progress or not. So that's really neat. And that's something you can do if you're running some of these games on emulation and everything. So it's nice that they brought that over. Second, the system will allow gamers to switch between 50 hertz or 60 hertz refresh rates. So PAL or NTSC purists get a game that kind of moves at the speed that they were used to back in the day. And finally, three display modes to choose from. There's pixel perfect for the truest output from NES, which is like square pixels. 4:3, which stretches the pixels wide. And apparently, I understand that 4:3 was, you know, the TV ratio back when I was a kid, but I didn't realize that Nintendo outputs square pixels, but 4:3 would stretch it out. So what we saw was actually untrue to the original format. That's what we saw when we were kids. So they have a mode to support that. And then finally, there's a special CRT filter that emulates the shortcomings and inconsistencies of CRT televisions. And I wonder how well that's done, because I feel like anytime you ever see those types of emulations, they don't look very convincing. But what do you think about this?
I mean, the CRT filter just fills me with joy and makes me laugh. The idea that you want to create a filter so it doesn't look too good, it needs to look like a CRT set. That makes me think that they need to add in a couple of other modes. There needs to be a mode where they simulate a younger sibling begging to play. So that needs to be. And there needs to be a mode where an older sibling is telling you to get off the game system so you can watch Magnum PI. Both of those things need to be in place to really have the full 1980s experience of playing the Famicom, right? I love this. I expect that I am going to put it on my Christmas wish list. I never owned a Nintendo growing up. I had an Atari 2600. Then a little thing happened called the video game crash of 1983. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to the Apple IIe computer and never got a chance to get a Nintendo. I would go to a friend's house and play Nintendo. This will let me finally have the Nintendo system I always wanted as a kid. And it lets me be lame by saving my game in games that you never could save. The only thing you could do is pause the game and leave it paused.
And leave it on overnight.
Game system turned on, while you go to school, and you would come back home, unpause it, and you're like, I'm gonna beat Sandman and Punch-Out. It is gonna happen.
You come home to unpause it and realize that your stupid little brother turned it off. And you're Tony!
There was a power surge and suddenly all of your progress in Legend of Zelda has been erased.
The main thing that I think that they need to emulate here, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it because it's not a cartridge-based system, is the requirement every once in a while to have to blow into the cartridge in order for it to actually work. And I don't know how you do that. Maybe there's a virtual representation of that.
Here's how you do it, Jason. You have the system so it looks like a Nintendo system, and you flip the little thing up as if a cartridge were to go in. Okay. It actually doesn't have a cartridge there, but it does have a microphone.
And then you blow on the microphone. Oh, okay.
And then, yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, now you can play.
Perfect. That wouldn't get annoying at all. But I mean, hey, that was life. You had to do that every once in a while. So, you know, if you want to get to emulating the real experience, you got to go with that inconvenience. It's just the way
it goes.
Coming up, Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is going to join us to talk a little bit about the newly unveiled currency for Twitch users. Before we talk about that, let's take a minute to thank LinkedIn Learning. They're the sponsor of this episode. The shelf life for skills is less than 5 years. Many of today's fastest growing categories did not even exist 5 years ago. Just think about that. Introducing LinkedIn Learning. It's personalized, expert-led, on-demand e-learning from LinkedIn. You'll keep your team engaged. LinkedIn Learning is the perfect way to promote professional development. LinkedIn Learning will identify the precise skills that you and your organization needs to achieve set goals, and will also create personalized recommendations using LinkedIn's network intelligence. Your team is going to have access to more than 9,000 courses, more than 25 courses added every week. Their library includes courses taught by world-class industry experts and cover topics ranging from leadership skills to design principles and programming, and a whole lot more. You just have to take a look. Learn anytime, anywhere, and their bite-sized segments are going to kind of allow you to view those on any device, online or off, and they get right to the problem, right? They provide immediate problem-solving, can be downloaded to learn on the go, so you have it queued up and ready when you need it. It's the perfect way to help team members close a skills gap without interrupting your latest project. Team solutions are available for as little as $2,000. Grow your network and your career. Visit learning.linkedin.com/twit to request a demo for your organization, or you'll get a free individual trial. That's learning.linkedin.com/twit. And we thank LinkedIn Learning for their support of Tech News Today. TwitchCon is underway, touting all sorts of twitchy game streaming stuff. And joining us to talk about an announcement from the event is Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica. How's it going, Sam?
Hello, hello. It's good to see everybody.
Good to see you, too. Welcome back, sir. Tell us a little bit about Amazon Game Studios' announcement last night. It has something to do with gambling, which is kind of strange.
It has something to do with gambling. Amazon Game Studios was doing an unveil for a game called Breakaway, which will launch sometime. They didn't give a date. It's one of these games that's going to be in an early access period. It'll be tested openly. People will be invited to alphas and pre-test sort of things and all this. And they very briefly mentioned something called Stream Plus. And that was, they whizzed right over it, explaining that Stream Plus would be a currency within the game that could be gambled. And that would be part of other Twitch games that would enable sort of gambling and betting. At which point I went, whoa, what?
Right.
This is, I believe, the first, the biggest game service to enable gambling within its games. Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, Steam, none of those have done that. And Twitch is not necessarily a game seller like those platforms, but it does absolutely involve money and a lot of kids, because you can subscribe, you can pay for bits, which give you little emotes. And there's been a little bit of controversy about Steam games, that's Valve software service, having what's turned into these sort of underground betting practices, where these games come with little items. You can earn these items in gameplay. They have this sort of inherent value. They can be traded, and gambling sites were built around them. And this got some lawmakers' attention. There's been some lawsuits filed. Valve has finally took action against those services, which were essentially exploiting parts of the Steam service to go in there and grab these items and make them tradable and gamblable and all this. Now, Amazon and Twitch didn't have a ton to say about how Stream Plus would work. They showed a couple of brief screens, which I managed to grab from their feed and post up the article. And you can see it specifically says two things. One, you earn these points, these Stream Plus coins, by watching. You can't pay for them, apparently. And two, they can be gambled. There was a little prompt that came up that said, who do you think is going to win, red team or blue team? And you could wager a certain amount and make double that amount if you won, lose it if not. I managed to find out a little later that there's actually, you'll be able to buy with these coins items within the game. And that to me is already a big red flag in terms of talking about gambling, because essentially what you're saying is if you engage in a gambling behavior, which as any odds person will tell you, the house will pretty much always win, and attach that to gaming, which is especially in terms of Twitch, a very young audience, you may really run afoul of, at the very least, American law, let alone many other nations' laws about what does and doesn't work about gambling. This currency, the one thing that Amazon said is that this Stream Plus currency will not transfer from game to game. They're saying that this game Breakaway will have its own Stream Plus economy, and any other game that uses that same thing would have their own. So I couldn't gamble a bunch in that game and then go blow it on the other or vice versa. But it seems really funky. My specific questions haven't necessarily been answered, and I think as more people notice it, because again, this was buried. They were talking a bunch about how this game works. It's like a basketball meets beating each other up sort of weird thing. It looks kind of cool as a game, but they just buried that in there, and I just thought everybody I mentioned it to, in fact, I have friends who work for Amazon in different departments, and I mentioned to them, they go, really? That seems odd. It just seems like a bad move to combine gambling with video games that overtly, that much built in. It's like it's in the infrastructure of watching the game. I think Twitch is going to face a lot of heat about this as more details come out and as it actually rolls out to young players.
Yeah, it really seems like the challenge. Yeah, I find myself at odds a little bit because games inherently like are based around kind of a competition, you versus a computer.
Well, but I mean, have you ever seen like the NFL Network or any of these other major leagues roll out an ability to bet anything?
No, absolutely. And what I was going to say is like I can understand on one hand as a viewer watching something, wanting to, you know, make a pick as far as who's going to win, who's going to lose, and maybe this currency aspect. But, you know, people who are watching place value on this. Twitch might not inherently like allow you to take that money out into other games. But if you can trade that between players within what you're watching within that single environment, I mean, that has value to the users. And they will
so many crafty ways to take accounts, bounce them around.
Right.
I could change my username, give it to somebody else. There's all kinds of ways that people figure out. And also think about throwing a game. How easy it'd be if people were betting on this and really cared about the value to throw the game so that the red team gets all those coins to one side. You know, that's exploits and internet and gaming. These things are just a default language of these worlds. So putting gambling in there and saying this is definitely just we endorse it is just stupid. It seems more like it's going to cause headaches than it's going to create value. And I don't see what that does really for Amazon and Twitch to do this.
Right. How does Breakaway look, by the way?
I mean, it looks like a pretty fun combination of fighting and MOBA and sports. It really seemed like Amazon shook up a few popular things and then rolled that out. And it actually looks distinct and interesting. It's from Double Helix. They actually took the Killer Instinct fighting game that had been dead for a while, brought it back, made it solid, and then Amazon bought them for $1 gazillion in 2014. And they've been working on this and some other stuff. There's other Twitch stuff that was announced. I don't know if you saw me write you this about the last minute. Amazon just announced Twitch Prime. That is thing that now exists, which is a different monetary thing. No gambling there. If you're already paying $100 a year or $11 a month for Amazon Prime, you now get to access Twitch benefits, which include ad-free game streaming and some free games every month, more games that are included with the subscription every month, and the ability to throw money into the tip jar of one streamer per month. It's called a subscription. So you can choose, I like to watch this person play Hearthstone. You pick them with your Twitch Prime bonus. They'll get $5 a month from you. So Amazon is essentially taking its Prime membership and being like, here, you can each of you millions of people can just start throwing $5 a month at somebody and Amazon will pay for it.
That's cool.
Seems like a very peculiar move on Amazon's part to essentially be like, we're just going to give all this money away. I suppose they think it's sustainable, and I think they really want people to go to Twitch and bother hitting a subscribe button as if that will hit a synapse in your brain and make you want to use Twitch more often. Will that be worth the $5 a viewer? I don't know. If MTV ever said, here's $5, give it to your favorite musician in the 90s, I mean, that would have been insane, but here we are.
Right. Yeah, and I wonder if this is the sort of thing that drives Amazon Prime subscriptions, like on the other side. Like, that's a nice added feature for people who are Prime subscribers, but is that going to move someone to sign up for it? And then HTC is bringing its Vive port marketplace to worldwide availability. How does it look to you?
Oh, the Vive port. This is one of those funny, weird things because HTC wants very badly to be seen as an important player in any industry right now. Smartphones hasn't necessarily panned out, a bunch of other devices, but virtual reality, they did pretty well. The Vive is not the worst thing I've ever used. It's not as comfortable as the Oculus Rift. It's more expensive, but it does stuff pretty well. The problem for HTC is that the people who they're partnered with, Valve Software, who make SteamVR, SteamVR was designed from the ground up to work with a bunch of different devices. So eventually HTC could be competing with LG or any other manufacturer who also wants to make their own headset and controllers and partner with SteamVR. So HTC, I think, knows this, and they realize, oh, we need to stand out. We're going to create our own app store. Here's the problem. The HTC Vive already has an amazing app store. It defaults to Steam. Steam has a ton of games, educational stuff, artistic stuff. If you want to do productivity things in VR, if you want to do already weird things in VR, Steam VR has everything, and it has a bunch of eyeballs. So what HTC is trying to do is saying, hey, why don't you come to a slightly less populated VR marketplace that requires another install? And it doesn't seem like they're giving any benefits to developers or any benefits to users to use this new service. It's just, here's one more click and an interface you're not necessarily familiar with. I don't think Steam VR needed fixing or solving. I think HTC is just desperate to be noticed and cared about in VR and to continue having their name exist in the VR conversation for the years to come. I don't think this was a smart move at all. I think this just fractures people's access to software while they're otherwise enjoying the hardware side that HTC got right. It's not a remarkable interface in terms of looking for apps. It's not remarkable in terms of presenting and sorting stuff out. It hasn't solved anything that other app stores like Google Play and the iOS App Store and things like that have struggled with. If anything, SteamVR is one of the best as far as looking at what you do, checking your hours, and propagating stuff that you might like. It's really good. SteamVR is very good at reminding me, hey, Sam, you really like VR and you've played a bunch of things, but here's stuff you haven't heard of. I'm the kind of person who should not be surprised by suggestions from an app store. Steam gets that right. But this HTC Vive port rollout might have more educational stuff. It might attract more of these educational and weird things that for whatever reason might not be at Steam VR, but that just makes no sense to me. It's stupid.
Steam VR, does it launch or is it installed as you set up your HTC Vive, or is this going to replace it as like the default store on the headset?
I wonder what's going to happen when people install it. Currently, when you get the HTC Vive and you set that whole thing up, you're instructed to install certain drivers and to install Steam. I don't think they're going to stop telling people to install Steam because it's part of Steam VR. It says Steam VR on the box. So that's not going away. This is unless HTC decides to raise a big middle finger to Valve and create just the Vive port store as the only install option for new users, do I think they really have a chance with this. And that, I think, would just nuke their whole thing into orbit. I think Valve would not hesitate to find another hardware partner to keep this pony going, because they're looking years down the line. They're looking at better hardware. They're looking at lighter, more comfortable headsets, better specs, more comfortable controllers. All this stuff is designed to grow over time. HTC needs Valve more than Valve needs HTC.
Right. Yep. That's the painful truth right there. Sam Skovich, Ars Technica. Thank you, Sam, for joining us as you usually do on Fridays. Really appreciate it.
Indeed. It's have a good weekend, everybody.
All right. You too. Take care. At Sam Red on Twitter. Before we continue on, I know, Jonathan, you've done a lot of coverage and stuff here and there on what makes VR tick. What do you think about VR right now? Kind of this year, we're almost at the point of the year in review for the year where VR and AR really kind of exploded. Are you bullish? What do you think about it?
I'm fairly bullish. Obviously, we still have a lot of barriers to entry, the biggest one being cost. You know, for anyone who doesn't already have a fairly beefy computer, getting one of the computer-based VR systems is it's going to hurt when you get down to it, because you've got to buy the machine as well as the headset. Then I think Sony's really well positioned, because you've got such a huge install base with the PlayStation 4 already, that that one is pretty good shape, I would argue. In general, I'm really bullish about it. I think we're really seeing what I wanted to see back in the mid 90s when the VR term first started popping up. But the truth of the matter was the hardware and software weren't anywhere close to what we needed it to be in order for it to become a household name. Unfortunately, it became a household name prematurely and then imploded on itself. And I think we probably could have had VR and AR of a pretty decent sophistication maybe 5 years ago if it hadn't been for that bubble that burst, because it set everyone back by at least 5 years. I'll be talking about AR and VR in Atlanta at the end of October. So this is something that I continue to keep my eye on. I personally do not own any VR sets. It has nothing to do with my thoughts on VR. I love VR. I just have a very small home.
Yep.
So finding physical space for some, well, especially for the Vive.
Yeah,
I love the concept of the Vive.
Yeah.
But I don't have a room I can dedicate just, I don't have a holodeck yet.
Don't we all wish we could have a holodeck? I mean, is that too much to ask? Seriously. I've got the Gear VR and I'm pretty happy with that. But it's like whet my appetite, and now I want one of the bigger ones, because I've realized over the course of this year that I actually am very bullish on VR, and I'm going to Oculus Connect next week, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome.
I mean, even if VR had happened 5 years ago, the technology still would have kind of held it back from a believability standpoint, and things are so much more progressed in these 5 years that I think now's the right time.
Yeah, I think we're right on the cusp. I think we're going to continue to see those costs come down, especially for your basic PC that can be VR compatible, because that's just the nature of it, right? The initial products are going to be expensive as we develop even more advanced hardware that, you know, we're going to have a nice baseline for VR that's going to become more affordable. It's still going to be a pretty steep price just to enter into it. But we're eventually going to get to a point where your standard PC is going to be beefy enough to run VR. And then, at least in the minds of most consumers, your price is no longer the computer plus the headset. It's just the headset. Yeah. And then it starts to become a little bit more affordable, at least for a larger population. Not everyone, but a larger population than was before.
For sure. For sure. Moving on to the email, Renard wrote into TNT@twit.tv about BlackBerry getting out of the hardware business. Renard says, BlackBerry loyalists have long since moved on. Actually, they took too long to finally bring BBM to Android and Apple. They actually should have brought it to those OSs back when it was still popular. The BlackBerry suite of software would matter if it was needed and people hadn't long since transitioned to whatever they use on iOS and Android and on their full computer options. The enterprise protection has also seen competition in the marketplace as well. When I finally switched, I made a conscious decision to buy an iPhone because I was going to always carry an iPod for music. I actually still liked the BlackBerry, but was finally tired of carrying two devices. He actually went on to say, and then he got a job and they required he carry another device. So he's back to two devices. But hey, that's the way the world works. But I completely agree. But BlackBerry's time to strike was probably 5 years ago, about the same time that VR was failing the first time.
I think BlackBerry's time to strike was about when the iPhone came out.
Yeah.
Because the problem was the iPhone was so sleek and sexy when it debuted in 2007, it became the status symbol. Like, the BlackBerry used to be the executive status symbol, and I would argue the BlackBerry was the superior product for the enterprise, simply for the protection it actually had for things that would be incredibly powerful and important for a corporation. You don't want that information getting out there, and BlackBerry was very good at handling that. But the problem was the iPhone was just so darn sexy. Every executive wanted to have the iPhone, not a big clunky BlackBerry with a physical keyboard, and that was the beginning of the end, and we just saw the decline continue from that point forward.
Yep, and you understood exactly why it was happening, why that decline was taking place. It seemed like the only one that didn't understand that was BlackBerry. Coming up, what won't actually be a big item this holiday season, but may next holiday season, you're going to recognize it from your past, possibly so. I know I recognized it. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's take a minute to thank Gazelle. They are the sponsor of this episode. Gazelle is the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used electronics. So you can trade in your old device for cash. You can buy a certified pre-owned device, or you can do both. There's a lot of phones being announced and released right now, so you want to make room for that in your own personal catalog, let's say. This is how you do it. For trade-ins, you simply visit gazelle.com. You can find your device on the site. You'll get an instant quote of what Gazelle will give you for that device. Shipping is free. Payment is fast. And if you're looking to buy a certified pre-owned device, Gazelle has a variety of iPhones, including the iPhone 6S and the iPhone 6S Plus. Also, iPads, Samsung Galaxy phones, all just listed there for you to choose from. Each device is fully inspected, backed by a 30-day return policy, and sold without a carrier contract. Go to gazelle.com. You just see what your old device is worth, and then check out the selections of certified pre-owned devices. Gazelle is now providing financing on all devices by Affirm. You simply provide your basic information. You'll get instantly approved, and you can pay it off in 3, 6, or 12 months. Easy monthly payments can be made through bank transfer, check, or debit card. Just select financing with Affirm at checkout to learn more about that. Gazelle also offers a 12-month warranty for cell phones and iPads powered by Assurance Solutions. That's going to cover water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects, and more. Of course, you have help available 24/7 to process claims and return your device right away. And you don't want to miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices. Just visit gazelle.com. And you can find all the devices that Gazelle has. Their devices are available in good and excellent conditions. If you're finding one that's good condition, basically it's going to show some gentle signs of wear and tear, but essentially it's going to offer you great prices on still great devices. All devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection process. That ensures that they're in perfect working order when you receive them. Devices available for support by all major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. And you've got the gamut of the devices, just all the big name devices that you can think. Many of them are going to be there. iPhone 5S, iPad Mini, Galaxy S5, S6, all sorts of devices. And as new devices are released, they get added to the catalog over time. Give new life to used electronics, trade in for cash, or buy certified pre-owned. Visit gazelle.com today. TNT's fan of the day is Jake Adrianson on Twitter, who says, "Every morning I open our Best Buy mobile store by playing Tech News Today over the speakers from my Nexus 6P. Yes! I love it. Every once in a while, people send this in and they say, yeah, play it in my store. Well, people are here. And yeah, spread the love. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we're going to find it. So I'm sure a good portion of our audience is excited about that NES mini console that we talked about earlier, but I may have just found a flashback piece of technology that's getting re-released that could eclipse it. I don't think this is going to eclipse it. Say hello to Teddy Ruxpin for, well, this is Teddy Ruxpin in 2016, super creepy, teddy bear basically has traded in that cassette tape player embedded spinal cord that it had back in the 80s with a 4 gig hard drive inside. Go ahead and play from the middle of this commercial when, because you might remember this commercial, Jonathan, from when I was a kid. I totally remember the Teddy Ruxpin.
I have a story for you, Jason, but do go on.
So Teddy Ruxpin was kind of a creepy deal. Hold on, maybe Teddy will say something.
4 batteries not included.
Hi, my name is Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh.
Can you and I be friends?
They're all like totally, oh man, it's like they're under hypnosis or something.
Yeah. It's very Children of the Corn style commercial.
You almost feel like Teddy's going to stop talking and they're going to raise out of their seats and attack the teacher. So in this case, you've got some upgrades, right? Full color LCD eyes. So, you know, they animate and do all sorts of things instead of that blank stare that you get out of the old one. Motorized mouth, of course. 100 megs per story. It can hold up to 40 stories. The drive, like I said, is 4 gigs underneath. And I think this is interesting. It ships with 10 stories, but only 3 are unlocked when you buy it. And then if you want to unlock more stories, that's right. You got to connect your smartphone. I don't know if they're in-app purchases or not because they don't mention it. But it kind of sounds like if they weren't paid for, why wouldn't they just activate them all on the Teddy Ruxpin? I don't know how I feel. Well, I know how I feel about this. I'm slightly creeped out. What do you think, Jonathan?
Well, I find the whole shipping with 10 stories, but only 3 are unlocked to fall right into that same category of shipping a video game with DLC already included, but you have to pay for it to actually unlock.
Yeah.
I hate that. I always hate that. Here's the thing. My dad's a science fiction author. My dad has, science fiction authors have been known to predict stuff, right? Like Arthur C. Clarke predicted geostationary satellites, for example. My dad has predicted 2 things, and one of them was Teddy Ruxpin.
Before the original.
He wrote a story called Teddly, T-E-D-D-L-Y, that published in 1984, a year before Teddy Ruxpin went on sale. And it was a story about a boy and his little robotic teddy bear that would tell him stories to help him go to sleep at night. And I won't tell any more of it, even though it's almost impossible to find the short story. It is still one of my favorites because with the name Teddly, you almost feel like there's going to be something sinister that happens. Spoiler alert, nothing sinister happens. It's actually an incredibly heartwarming story. When I read it as a kid, I was like, I was thinking it was going to be scary, but now I'm crying. When Teddy Ruxpin came out, my dad was really tickled because he had managed to predict a type of technology. And we even owned one. My sister had one. Also, the rumor that you could put other tapes into the cassette player and have Teddy lip sync to Black Sabbath, totally not true. You could play other tapes in Teddy Ruxpin, but his mouth was it was guided by a specific magnetic code on the cassette tape, and any regular tape lacked that code, so you wouldn't get the motion from Teddy. It would just blast out through the speaker.
So, yeah, okay. Oh man, this toy was so popular. Like between 85 and 90, it was like that was his prime years, which is probably why I remember it so well. I did not have one. I remember having a friend that had one, and it creeped me out every time I went over there, and just like looking at it creeped me out, let alone hearing it. It's on Time's top 100 toys list. If you have an original of these, they sell for like $1,000 on eBay right now. They're hot items, basically. Was your dad Brad Strickland?
That's my dad.
Okay.
That's my dad. My dad still is Brad Strickland.
Well, yes.
It wasn't just that he was Brad Strickland.
But
he continues to be Brad Strickland to this
that's
day.
That's good. That makes it easy for you to remember. Remember throughout the course of your life. Yeah, right. I really want to read the story, and I could only find a mention of it with his name.
I will tell you what, Jason, we're friends. Okay. So what I will do is when this is over, I'll give my dad a call, see if he happens to have a copy of that. And if he does, I'll get it to you.
Excellent. I might not be the only one that wants to read it, though. I'm just saying. Jonathan Strickland, always such a pleasure getting you on the show. Thank you so much for carving time out of your Friday to talk some tech.
I always love to do it. In fact, it's always a real trial to try and get me to shut up. So I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
That's why I love having you on the show, man. Tell people where they can follow all the cool stuff you're doing.
Go to howstuffworks.com or go to now.howstuffworks.com. That's kind of our newsy site that we're doing, where we're covering stories that are unfolding, giving some context to them, explaining why they're important, what's cool about them. I'm one of the writers for that. I'm also one of the video hosts. I also do a technology podcast called Tech Stuff, and that's been going on since 2008. So there's about 800 something episodes of that. If you want to go and work your way through the back catalog, awesome.
Get started.
It's funny because this year I uncovered an episode that I recorded 5 years ago that was, what will the internet be like in 5 years? And I thought, And then I went back and listened to it. I got everything right, Jason.
No way. That never happens for me.
I re-released the episode. I re-released the episode because I was so happy that I got it all right.
So did you make very specific targeted predictions or was it?
There were things like I had a lot of stuff about augmented reality. I had stuff about personalized advertising. I had a lot of stuff about mobile. I argued that mobile was going to be way more important than what it was even in 2011. It was a lot of stuff that ended up, you know, not everything was 100% on the dot, but everything was so pointed in the right direction. And yeah, it was more specific than just more people will use the internet. Right. It was a little better than that.
Good work. And yeah, and that's what you do. Once you find that, you republish it because you want everybody to know just how right you are.
It'll never happen again.
You got lucky, but you got very lucky all in one episode. Thanks again, Jonathan. Everybody should check that out for sure. And we'll have you back soon. Appreciate it.
Love the
tooth. Megan returns on Monday, and we also are getting a revisit. We have not had Becky Worley on in a really long time. She's going to be on this Monday. Really looking forward to that as well. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV. You can find all the ways to subscribe to our show by just going to twit.tv/TNT. If you want to tweet at me, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Mario. I almost did it again, dude. It's like in my brain. Oh, it permeates me, and I'm sorry, but I got it right. I almost called him Romeo again. Oh. And thanks to Kevin, the new Romeo. That's right. I said it to you, Kevin. You're the new Romeo now. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. There we go.